Hi, I'm Matthew Kind. Every Monday, look for a fresh new episode where I'll take you behind the scenes and interview the insiders that are shaping the rapidly evolving cannabis industry. Learn more at cannainsider.com. That's C-A-N-N-A insider.com. Now here's your program. Is cannabis the largest investment trend of this generation? Today's guest is going to tell us how a wall of money is about to move into cannabis. I am pleased to welcome Todd Harrison of CB1 Capital to the show. Todd, welcome to Canna Insider.
Hey, Matt. Thank you for having me.
Give us a sense of geography. Where are you in the world today?
We're in Fort Washington, New York, sort of about 40 minutes outside of Manhattan on Long Island.
Okay. And what is CB1 Capital on a high level?
On a high level, CB1 Capital, we have our wellness fund where we invest in the global cannabis space. And then we have an advisory arm where we help companies, public and private, as well as some hedge funds, some ETFs and such, navigate this exciting space.
Todd, can you share a little bit about your background and journey and how you got into the cannabis space and started CB1 Capital?
Sure. So my background's in finance. I started in Morgan Stanley Equity Derivatives in 91, was a VP there, moved over to the buy side at various roles in Y2K, went over to Jim Cramer's shop, ran their trading operation. I became president in 2001. And was down there when the planes hit and the towers fell. So, you know, that was really the pivot, unbeknownst at the time for me, into cannabis, because, seeing the people holding hands and jumping and running from the smoke and all that, I had the wherewithal, thankfully, to go talk to somebody. And that somebody was Dr. Julie Holland, who, as it turns out, was and is quite the expert on cannabis and really alternative therapies in general. And this was back, several years after 9/11, still, I would confide in her that I was drawn to cannabis to help with the anxiety and with sleep. And I was feeling guilty about that. And she asked why. And I told her, well, you know, this is your brain on drugs. And I learned it from watching you, Dad, and all that. And she turned me on to the science. She opened that door, that rabbit hole, if you will, for the intellectually curious. Studied the history and the weaponization of this plant as an immigration tool, studied the science and really the endocannabinoid system and its role in regulating neurotransmissions and that retrograde pathway to wellness. And then really, what a natural global free market looks like, and the artificial impediments that were in the way of this moving into a taxable realm. So that really began the journey that ultimately led to CB1 Capital taking shape. My partner, William DeFalco, has experience in studying the endocannabinoid system for over a decade now. And we surrounded ourselves with who we think are really, some of the best minds in cannabinoid wellness. And as much as sort of we're sitting here at the precipice of cannabis 2.0, we really are laying in wait for cannabis 3.0 and certainly the wellness attributes that are going to come out the other side of that biotech pathway.
Todd, can you paint a picture of where you think where we are in this cannabis investing story now?
Yeah. I think the short answer is that we're in the eye of the perfect storm. And I say that after the space has rallied, had a pretty significant rally year over year before this latest, call it 4-month consolidation. And, you know, you take a step back and you look at cannabis 1.0, which is that Canadian cultivation story, and how that was the bubble and bust of 2018. And from January 2018 to March of last year, the global cannabis index that Bloomberg has, it was down 92%. And that was before the pandemic arrived, of course. And it was a real, it was a real existential moment for the space. It could have gone either way. There was no access to capital. There was no, had Pershing, which is a large custodian, had pulled the plug on all things cannabis, and everybody could only sell. Similar now to what we're seeing on a different level, which I'll get to. But at the time, there was really no visibility. But as the virus took shape, cannabis was deemed essential. I think as the breadth and the depth of the pandemic began to self-actuate, cannabis as a solution began to take hold. Cannabis as a wellness supplement for anxiety and sleep began to take hold. And certainly cannabis as a tax driver and employment engine in a post-pandemic world began to take hold. And that was really the, in our view, March of 2020 was that cyclical bottom within a secular bull market. And certainly as Black Lives Matter and that social justice piece evolved over the course of the last year, as we refer to as the slow motion perfect storm for cannabis, continuing into the elections with the 5-state sweep, both red and blue, and then ultimately with Schumer, come January, although certainly I think a lot of people are frustrated right now. But through our lens, we are, sitting right at the cusp of 2.0, and that will be really triggered by that institutional adoption. It's going to require some changes to the current construct to allow investors to access these names. But I think that's where we are right now. As a state-led story, this will continue to manifest over the next couple of years.
Are there any particular pieces of the cannabis ecosystem that you're most excited about as an investor?
I mean, I think right now the MSOs are, I think that's where you want to be. We try to poke holes in a lot of our own, bullish thesis here as the plumbing for the marketplace right now is so convoluted. And obviously, I think as your audience knows or should know, you can't buy U.S. cannabis on U.S. exchanges. You have to go to the pink sheets. You have to go to the CSE, both garbage exchanges and by and large institutions and most retail investors, U.S. retail investors can't access these securities if they even know the difference between U.S. and Canadian cannabis companies. But we think that's an opportunity. We think that as these walls fall over time, and we do believe that's going to be an incremental process, these arbitrages will re-rate, these equities will re-rate, and you'll see some more appropriate multiples on these securities versus right now they're really being choked off from investors. And we could, debate why that is, but I think it's transitory.
So with the MSOs or multi-state operators, which ones do you think, how do you evaluate which ones are better than others?
Well, it's a good question. I think generally, we look at it and say, there is the FANG, if you will, those five horsemen, five-letter FANG, if you will, that are emerging. And then you have the back of that totem pole or the second and third tier guys, that'll probably have more leverage to something like safe banking or some of these other incremental legislative initiatives that we think are going to come through the pipe. But certainly, I think the conventional wisdom would look at names like Green Thumb and Curaleaf and Trulieve, Cresco, TerrAscend. Maybe throw Verano in there because they've got the scale, maybe not the operating history. But then as you start to move down, there's some really good companies, I think I said Cresco, but, the forefronts of the world, the Gauges of the world, these are good companies, largely, operating in this inefficient market right now with a very limited investor pool. So you have a lot of these arbitrages, if you will, valuation arbitrages and also regulatory arbitrages that, that are laying in wait, none of which, to be honest, we're really depending on right now. We think that slow and steady wins the race. As my friend Jason Wild says, you could pay us now or pay us more later. The longer you have these artificial walls around cannabis, the more, traction these companies are going to get in their home states, building these brands, building those footprints, building the scale of the company and the enterprise value of the company for when that buy build eventually arrives, when CPG and the rest of them, come to participate in the space. So all of that's in front of us. It really is, you know, it's a fascinating space right now, but it's not without its impediments.
What, if anything, do you think is going to happen from a federal legislation point of view?
Well, you know, as we sit here, what is it, June 15th?
Yep.
You know, I think the market's told you now that there's going to be no sweeping federal change. I think the market, you know, trading where it was in January, I mean, literally to the tick as I'm sitting here talking with you, to where it closed the night before Schumer won the Senate majority leadership when the Democrats took the Senate. So all of the expectations for federal movement through our lens have been removed. Still, we expect incremental progress. Our latest sort of, you know, intel is that Schumer is going to attach SAFE Plus to some must-pass legislation this fall, because as the Senate Majority Leader, he may wish to have sweeping reform. Aside from the fact that he doesn't have 50, much less 60 votes for that, he's also the senator from New York, and New York is fully legal. New York has social justice programs that are, you know, coming out of the gate. And the senator from New York knows that there can be no social justice without functional banking. So I think that light bulb went off over the Senate in the last however many weeks, that they're going to need to piecemeal this. I think that is sort of the best case scenario for the MSOs and the existing operators, not the best case for all of the people who are sitting in jail for doing the things that we're getting paid to do, which is, you know, a travesty. Right. And so there's a lot of different moving parts here. Of course, criminal justice, you know, there's talk about moving this to a Schedule II versus taking it off the CSA. But even moving it to a Schedule II, it doesn't lend itself to any meaningful broad based criminal reform. Right. You have to take this off of the Controlled Substance Act, circle it like you have for cigarettes and like you have for alcohol. You leave it to the states. And you have the criminal justice component, and then you have the social equity component at the state level. That's where it nets out ultimately, with the state's rights being protected. And eventually, over time, and I don't have visibility on it, interstate commerce, which will, you know, shift the dynamics and certainly change some of the economics. But I think by the time that all sort of plays through, you're going to have a much larger investing universe involved with these stocks.
How is a huge cannabis brand like it's the size of a Coca-Cola, or as iconic as a Coca-Cola, going to break through into this market when they're all essentially in state fiefdoms in a way? Is that possible? How do you see that evolving?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. Ultimately, brands are going to be where it goes. I think everybody knows that, although nobody really has sort of a good sense on how we get there. I mean, right now you could argue Cookies is the best or only brand in cannabis, and they do that in an interesting sort of piecemeal way, but one that certainly works, but can help sort of demonstrate what that model might look like. But I think for the first kind of phase of adoption, you know, honestly, we more envision, you know, people experimenting, looking for the best quality at the lowest cost. And that helping to inform their decisions and drive those brands. Obviously, you know, you see what Ben's doing at Green Thumb with Snoozeberry, with Dog Walkers, things like that, I think are a model of what you look for in building brands.
Do you think cannabis is the investing opportunity of this generation?
I mean, I'm pretty much betting my entire life, reputation, and all of my money on it, so I sure should hope so, my friend.
Right. You might need a dog walker if it doesn't pan out.
I might need a dog, because I'll have sold mine. But I mean, the point is, you know, there's not many times in your life. I left after 9/11. I left Wall Street. I started a media company, went down, you know, and it was all about the markets and helping people make better and more informed decisions. During that time, I was studying and I was researching. I was fascinated by cannabis and the efficacious agility that's going to come out of the back end here on the other side of these clinical trials. We're still so early. There's still people out there that think that cannabis is more likely to cause cancer than to help solve for it. right? And all of that, as that comes through, is going to illuminate the consumer curve, you know. And I think as we look back, you know, there's only two sides to history, and there's only one right side here. I mean, this plan has a 30,000 year or some odd relationship with the earth, with 10,000 years as a wellness supplement across societies, across cultures. You know, this prohibition, this man-made prohibition that ignored the efficacy, that ignored the wellness, that, you know, that incarcerated so many people of color. It's a black stain on the soul of this country, and I think it's over. It's just a matter of how it unwinds, how it plays out. But, you know, cannabis is the earth's medicine. It is one of the earth's blessings, and it's been villainized and weaponized, and that's all coming to an end now. So that's exciting.
How do you feel Canada compares and contrasts to the U.S. in terms of investments and investment opportunities?
Listen, a lot's going on right now, discussions across, I guess, the exchanges we can talk a little bit about. I know the TSX is having conversations, we're told, and ultimately it's going to come down to how that footprint matriculates. I mean, I think, you know, at the current sort of rate and pace, all things being equal, you know, the MSOs, you know, the big boys are more likely to turn around and buy a Canadian LP when they want exposure, if they even want to do that. Or go out and build it themselves, as opposed to, you know, being able to, you know, when some of these guys that don't have the backing of a Constellation or Altria, you know, aren't going to be able to afford the MSOs. Every new state that comes on is like another Canada. I mean, you think about next year, if Connecticut at this special session goes through, you have the entire tri-state area coming on board next year. And that's a pretty big deal. And then the year after, you're probably talking Maryland, Pennsylvania. The year after that, maybe Ohio and Florida. You can move around the states, you can move around the dates, but they're all coming. They all need the money. And as we research this plant, and it itself fulfills what those of us who have been touched by the efficacy will so passionately tell you, that this has got, you know, this is, we're in the early stages of a multi-year secular bull market. Painful for the last 4 months, but you know what? Green Thumb went up 900%. Take a third off the top over 4 months, let it chop around, frustrate people. You know, I could argue that's healthy, even though it doesn't feel healthy as I'm sitting here talking to you.
Okay. Yeah. So for people that are in other industries with skill sets and they want to bring them into the cannabis industry, who do you think's kind of the best candidates to come in and add value?
Wow. It's a good question. I don't know if I have an easy answer. What I can tell you is I tell people who ask me about this and they say, well, I have no experience. I say, well, really nobody has experience on a relative basis. If you go forth and study the science, you know, keep in mind the endocannabinoid system was first discovered in the early 90s, wasn't taught at medical school, still even not taught in many medical schools. And the parallels between the people and the plant and, you know, our endocannabinoid systems and the cannabinoids found in cannabis, still very much frontier science, right? Just now starting over the last couple of years to be taught at universities. So, you know, I think that's I have twin 17-year-olds. They don't listen to me. They think, right. You know, they don't get it. But I tell them, I say, if you want to really, you know, never really worry about having another job, follow the science, learn about the ECS and cannabis and there's that side. But really there's, you know, if 1.0 was about cultivation and 2.0 is about CPG and cannabis as an ingredient, you know, you think about the use cases, the end products and the agility of the end products, whether it's from nutraceuticals and beverages and the social lubricant side of the equation, or the wellness supplements, the pet supplements, the cosmetics and vanity, the hemp use cases across, you know, biofuel and hempcrete and plastic composites, it's going to be ubiquitous. And I tell you that in answer to your question, because I do think that there's going to be a genuine need for an educated labor force across the entire spectrum. And I do think this is going to be one of those things that we look back, just like, you know, prohibition was repealed coming out of the Great Depression. You know, I think the modern Great Depression or the COVID is going to see a modern day sequel of that story, right? History rhymes. So that's what we're seeing at the state level. I think the biggest possible risk is the FDA. Schumer knows that. I don't think that sees the light of day during this Congress. And I think by the next Congress, you already have the tri-state area on board and billions and billions in tax revenues and upwards of a million jobs, make it a different discussion versus the CBD story with the FDA.
Tell us about your advisory board. You got some heavy hitters on there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if there's a Mount Rushmore for cannabinoid wellness, it's these guys and girls. Dr. Ethan Russo, Dr. Julie Holland, Dr. Jeffrey Chen. I mean, these are pioneers in the space and you know, good at what they do, better at who they are. Governor Gary Johnson, Warren Gertner, one of the founders of Cronos, and the godfather of Canadian cannabis, as he's called. So we have a good team. And I think beyond that, as we look around sort of our ecosystem, we found ourselves good partners, good, you know, we know all of the funds in the space. We all talk to each other. We know the analyst community. We know the management teams. I mean, the good news is that we have, you know, right now, this is a pretty close-knit, cottage community. I think what a lot of people miss is they sit here and commiserate because I see retail on Twitter complaining about the price action. And I listen to, you know, the smartest small cap growth managers in the world tell me, you know, complain that they can't own these names. And I think by the time we get to where we're going to go, this cottage industry will be an industrial complex and these, it's just going to be different. I still think this is the easy trade. It doesn't feel like it, you know, when these things are moving, 20-30% any given, direction, but it's still the easy trade because once these uplist, once institutions are on board, it's just going to get a lot harder and it's going to be a lot different.
What do you think? Will there be any signs that you feel like we're about to enter the next stage of kind of huge growth? Is that something? Go ahead, tell us what those would be. Those
signs. It's just trading volumes. We'll
trading
see.
Trading volumes. The cash coming in.
Yeah. I mean, I sit here I sit here and I stare at the screens. I stare at the volume because volume qualifies price. I've been trading over 30 years. The reason we are 90% in publicly traded securities is because there is zero doubt in our minds that once institutions adopt this space, they are going to articulate those strategies through publicly traded securities, just as they always have, right? And they're going to want their monthly NAV. They're going to want, they're going to want the reporting, the whole nine. The problem with the space right now is not the business. Business is great and getting better. The total addressable market's getting bigger. New states are coming on every year, even every month, couple months now. The issue is the clearing and the custodian. I mentioned earlier, Pershing had pulled the plug at the end of 2019, really, driving the knife into the back of the space right into the pandemic. And more recently, Bank America, Merrill Lynch, CS First Boston, there's a whole handful of them, UBS. A lot of them, were never very cannabis friendly. Like BAML, told us a year and a half ago what I guess they sent a memo around last week that freaked people out. But the reality is this is a plumbing issue. Whatever the agenda is, whatever the, follow the money, listen. I've been doing this a long time. These are unnatural price movements for cannabis because they're not in a free market because they have no access. They're cutting access off to the participants. If this was happening on Reddit or Wall Street Bets, there'd be a revolution because it's happening and on the CSE for a handful of investors. I don't think a lot of people are paying attention, but it's not going to last forever, put it that way. And these companies are trading at really attractive multiples with really exciting growth trajectories in front of them. So again, we look at it as an opportunity.
Yeah. The kind of finance and cannabis are these emerging trends. I mean, fintech, Wall Street's kind of getting rewired in a way. When you look at it from, a 10,000 foot view, you see fintech and crypto and blockchain. How do you see that kind of changing the old guard or the old way of doing things and bringing in a new?
I mean, listen, disruptive tech is tremendous. I think blockchain is brilliant. I'm a no coiner. I say that without vice or virtue because I don't know it. I can't tell you the difference between coins. And to be honest, I've been staring at cannabis for so long, my eyes are green. But the truth is, you know, this up and coming generation, they're all cannabis friendly. All of the opposition for cannabis, it's been a demographic thing for the last decade, has been aging out. You have 92% of the country agreeing that there should be some sort of legal cannabis, and 92% of the country doesn't rule out anything, doesn't agree on anything. And then you have this whole younger generation that, you know, is looking to go green and stick it to the man and the industrial complex. I mean, cannabis just checks so many different boxes, plus the fact, you know, it's good for you. And I think that's the part that most people are going to get a little bit whacked out on when they realize that this isn't about vice. It's not about getting high. It's about getting well. This is really about a therapeutic response to a lot of the unmet medical conditions that are out there because we, you know, haven't been able to regulate neurotransmissions as a matter of course. I think that's going to change as 3.0 takes shape, and that's exciting. So, you know, it's going to take time, and markets, you know, are very, as you know, ADD, immediate gratification, you know, pay me now, and policy takes time. So you have a duration mismatch, and, you know, when you have a 99.9% retail universe trading these stocks, it tends to be a very emotional bunch.
Todd, I'd like to ask you a few personal development questions to get a sense of who you are personally. Is there a book that's had a big impact on your way of life or thinking that you'd like to share or you recommend often?
I think Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl is the most powerful book I've ever read. I've read it a few times. I would say if I had to pick one, that would probably be the book. Yep.
Okay. And, you know, I want to hear your thoughts on whether you think New York's going to rebound as the same city it was pre-COVID-19, or if it's going to change, how you think it might change.
New York always bounces back. It bounced back after 9/11. It bounced back after the great financial crisis. It'll bounce back again. It will be different. I think as a matter of course, there's going to be a demographic shift to the suburbs and the country. And I think that COVID is, you know, helped to sort of sort of crystallize that. And you've seen the outsized real estate movement in the suburbs. Certainly a lot of unintended consequences of policy, certainly going to manifest in ways that I'm not smart enough to know. But I will tell you, if you can find companies that you believe are going to continue to demonstrate solid growth with good management teams, and they're priced attractively, follow the fundamentals, right? In the short term, you have all these guys, all these traders voting on, you know, whatever this chart pattern is on a, you know, in the smallest, nearest time horizon. And, you know, over the long term, the market's going to weigh companies with good fundamentals and reward them with growth. And that's where I think we are.
Last question, Todd. What's your favorite unhealthy comfort food?
It's really like, it's like asking me who my favorite child is. There's a lot, anything, you know, chocolate, dark chocolate. But yeah, that's my go-to.
Okay. Well, Todd, thanks so much for coming on the show and educating us about the investment world. We really appreciate it. As we close, how can listeners find out more about you and CB1 Capital?
I am seated at www.cb1cap.com, Charlie Boy, the number one cap. You can sign up for our free daily recap. I have a Substack, Todd Harrison. I am on Twitter, Todd_Harrison. It's not hard to find me, but if you find me, hopefully we can make some money together.
Great. Todd, thanks again.
Yep, terrific. Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed the show today, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever app you might be using to listen to the show. Every 5-star review helps us to bring the best guest to you. Learn more at cannainsider.com/iTunes. What are the 5 disruptive trends that will impact the cannabis industry in the next 5 years? Find out with your free report at cannainsider.com/trends. trends. Have a suggestion for an awesome guest on Canna Insider? Simply send us an email at feedback@cannainsider.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please do not take any information from Canna Insider or its guests as medical advice. Contact your licensed physician before taking cannabis or using it for medical treatments. Promotional consideration may be provided by select guests, advertisers, or companies featured in Canna Insider. Lastly, the host or guests on Canna Insider may or may not invest in the companies or entrepreneurs profiled on the show. Please consult your licensed financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Final disclosure to see if you're still paying attention. This little whistle jingle you're listening to will get stuck in your head for the rest of the day. Thanks for listening, and look for another Canna Insider episode soon. Take care. Bye-bye.